All right. Welcome everyone to the Verifiable Credentials API work item call. This is Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. Our agenda is here in the chat channel. On the agenda today, let me go ahead and screen share. On the agenda today, John, I believe you wanted to chat a bit about presenting VC API at the Open Wallet Foundation, so we should definitely pick that up. And then the rest of the time we had set aside for talking about VC API exchanges and kind of discussing what that looks like. So I apologize that the rest of these items here that I'm highlighting are not going to be this week, unless there are any objections to, you know, changing our agenda. Before we get started, we'll also go over pull requests, which we're falling, I am falling behind on, unfortunately. We usually start out by doing introductions, reintroductions. We do have someone new joining us today, which is great. Timothy, would you mind just doing a quick introduction about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for that. And, you know, really excited to be here with everyone. I'm Timothy Summers. I'm the executive director of Third Horizon Initiatives at ASU and founder and lead of a project that we have here called Pocket. And, you know, we're basically building a digital wallet and portfolio that enables learners to capture their achievements and all kinds of things that they might want to capture, like experiences and all kinds of other things, skills and knowledge. So that's me in a nutshell, and really excited to be here with the group.
Awesome. Welcome, Timothy. Great to have you here. And as some of you know, you know, Pocket and Timothy ASU participated quite heavily in the Jobs for the Future Plugfest number 2. If I remember correctly, Phil Long, you're with ASU as well, right? Okay. Anyone else want to do introductions, reintroductions? Has your position changed? Is what you're working on changed? Any updates like that? Not. We will jump into relevant community updates. All right, relevant community updates. Let me bring up there. So the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, the 2.0 specification, is entering feature freeze. We will be at feature freeze by the end of March. That's the cutoff date. So the theory here is that after that date, we will only be dealing with issues that are in the current issue tracker. There are 83 of those. We will only be working on specifications that will have been adopted by that point. We will start ratcheting down, the group and getting ready to go into candidate recommendation, which is when we actually start implementing the specification around the summer. So again, those dates are feature freeze for everything in the Verifiable Credentials 2.0 working group by end of March. So we have a month. And then candidate rec, which is we tell the implementers to start implementing the spec is stable, around, the summer at some point, probably towards the end of the summer. In order to, go ahead, Patrick.
How's this going to work out? Like once V2 is out, is it going to supersede V1 or are they both going to live side by side, meaning implementers could choose to issue V1 credential, or is it going to be strongly recommended to migrate towards V2? Or is V1 going to be deprecated eventually?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that question. Typically V1.1 lives out there because you're already seeing V1.1 be like put into like legislation, yeah. Right? And sometimes that gets like the European Union, architectural reference, you know, thing has talks about V1.1. They will probably update it to V2, but that's not guaranteed. So usually the signaling is those of you that are using V1.1, you can keep using it. It's totally fine. You know, you can continue deploying on that. And if you like V2 better, you can use V2. And then, of course, the implementers are almost certainly going to be expected to support both V1.1 and V2. The good news there is that they're not horrible breaking changes between the two. And so it's a fairly light lift to support V1.1 and V2 at this point in time.
Thank you.
Yep. But, you know, who knows what the working group's going to do? They might decide to do something totally different, right? I think it would be good for the whole ecosystem for us to basically strongly urge people to move over to V2. It's better, right? But you know how that works. You can't get 100% of the ecosystem to move versions if people have already deployed stuff. Okay, so in order to be ready for candidate recommendation, typically a working group, it's a good idea. Usually it used to be like you'd go into candidate recommendation and then you'd like figure out what the test suite is going to do. But it's usually a good idea to have a test suite well before you go into candidate recommendation so that, and you have implementers so that you know you're going to survive candidate recommendation. Because if you have to remove a feature or change a feature during candidate recommendation, you have to effectively give everyone enough notice, which is effectively a minimum of a couple of weeks to do the rev. And usually candidate recommendation, you know, it's like you're in there for like a minimum of 3 months or until at least every single feature that the working group wanted implementers to implement is done. So it's a huge pain to have to, you know, figure out the test suite while you're, you know, in the pressure cooker of candidate recommendation. So we try to get the test suite done before. Today we just proposed a test suite for verifiable credentials 2.0, at the CCG because the process was like we incubate stuff in the CCG. We make sure that, you know, it's got buy-in. And then once it gets buy-in, then the verifiable credential working group decides whether or not they want to take on the work. So earlier today I proposed like, hey, here's a test suite. It's powered by the VC API because we already have 13 implementers for it. We've been able to demonstrate interoperability before JFF Plugfest 3. And then the chairs were like, no, don't do this here. Just bring it straight to the verifiable credential working group. So this is, I think, the chairs wanting us to just not do the incubation in CCG and just put it into the verifiable credentials working group directly. So, I think that's fine. That's one thing that's happening. The other thing is, you know, Ori felt like it's not appropriate for the verifiable credentials working group to use the verifiable credentials API to do testing on the specification. I don't really understand where that's coming from, but there it is. And I think Mike Prorock, one of the chairs, is saying he would rather, instead of using the VC API, use Postman and Newman-based tests, which is what they've been using for the traceability work stream. So with that said, Greg, maybe you could add the color that you added at the beginning of the call.
Part of that is coming up with the tests, but then you need an interface to the tests, and VC API is the simplest interface available. And we're not talking about the entire set of VC API. We're talking about just some fundamental ways of getting the VCs in so we can test them. Cause I'm working on test vectors for some of the signing stuff. And yeah, I'm going to be running, you know, test suites, but how you get the data in the test of a, you know, and that's what seems so good about using the VC API. I do not know if they were thinking that we're talking about the whole VC API or not. So that was just my impression.
Thanks, two cents worth. Thank you. Very, very helpful. Go ahead, Dave, and then Patrick, you're next.
Yeah, I don't think anyone needs to get the impression that anyone would be required to implement to this test suite to be able to prove conformance. This is just a test suite that is one mechanism by which people can demonstrate that they're implementing the data model. And if whatever, to whatever extent we need to make that more clear, that would be great. This doesn't preclude anyone else from developing their own test suites and encouraging people to implement against those. But this is work that people have already done that we could use to leverage and provide some signals that some people have actually implemented the 2.0 data model.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Patrick?
Yeah, just to follow on the same trend, like if we look at the VC test suite, the first one, you know, there was the concept of a command line generator and so on, and it was not so obvious how it could be run. I think the way I read this is you're going to abstract this generator concept with the VC API, which is going to sort of act as your generator, meaning it's just going to take an input and return a verifiable credential. And I think that only tackles like two routes, the credentials issue and probably presentations prove, which are very, I don't know, the way I see it, pretty simple endpoints, and shouldn't be too complicated to implement. So yeah, I think it makes sense. The second sort of parallel I wanted to make, so in the Aries agent test, Ernest, we have what's called the back channel, which is like a common API definition for different frameworks to be able to be called by the test suite. So I like this sort of parallel, and it's a system that kind of makes sense, and you can do modular tests on this defined API, and then people can decide which route they want to include and which tests they want to run. So I think it's good. One of my question was, so I was looking that in the document, it said to include your implementation in the VC test suite implementation. So this test suite for VC.2, is it going to become like another of the test suite for the VC API, or it's going to be sort of this own thing that can leverage the VC API? What's the...
The second thing you said is the intent.
Right, so it's going to be its own thing, but can leverage specific endpoints of the VC API to... Yeah, for me, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, thanks. Joe, you're up. And you might be double muted.
Yep, extra hardware button. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So unfortunately, I wasn't able to make the CCG call today. They actually can't send it over to the VCWG, and they actually also can't stop the work. So I think one question is, do we feel that this work will survive over at the VCWG in a better way than currently as it's incubated? Because I felt pushback, just like Ori saying, hey, don't do the test suite with the VC API. So I'm not sure the VCWG is really going to accept the work.
So let's play out what that scenario might look like. Because we have a process here, right? So, typically we bring it in front of the CCG. The CCG chairs and the VCWG chairs said they'd get together and figure out what to do. There was a clear instruction from the VCWG chair that we should just bring it directly to the VC working group. If for whatever reason it is rejected there, and I think that there's a sensitivity here that some in that group have that this would be the VCWG blessing the VC API as a valid way to do something. And that could send the wrong signals in the market for the people that want like OIDC to be the one, you know, protocol to move VCs around. And I would imagine that that is probably the reason people might minus one that. Because the other reasons don't make a whole ton of sense, as people have been saying. But let's say that that happens and this is rejected, this work item's rejected from the VCWG, then we just bring it back to the CCG and go, the process is we have two people that want to work on it from independent organizations, and we're going to do the work in the CCG then. And if anyone wants to demonstrate interop, we've got 13 implementers that are already doing it, and we can just, you know, move them into the thing. And then... You know, and then we go from there, right? I mean, as Dave said, you know, there doesn't have to be just one conformance test suite. They can be multiple, especially if what they're doing is just looking at the conformance statements in the specification and writing tests for that. So, you know, if that's kind of, although Joe, I think that's kind of a worst case scenario, and I don't necessarily want to, believe that people would act in bad faith in that way. You know, how a test suite is implemented is entirely up to a working group, and there's nothing that says that because the working group used a particular technology that they're blessing that technology, because that same argument would apply to Postman and Newman. Like, you know, if we decide to do the tests instead of using the VC API using Postman and Newman, then the group is blessing the use of Postman and Newman in, you know, the verifiable credentials ecosystem, which we're not, like, it's not doing that, right? It's just we've tried to reuse software infrastructure that we've invested in over the past 2+ years. Anyway, that's my 2 cents. Patrick, you're up next.
This hypothetical that they will feel like this is superseding like OIDC for VC or something, like, is that based on misconception? Because this test suite doesn't test, like the delivery or the exchange. It's really just to test the data model. So is that just a misconception of what the VC API component really means in this test suite?
Correct. It's a misconception, but there's a question around if it's, you know, if it's a,
because it's
being done on purpose, or if there is actually truly a misconception.
Right.
I mean, I think we're entering into kind of tech industry politics at this point, and, you know, it's kind of like, if there are people that don't want to see something happen, they will find many reasons that sound technical to not do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, fundamentally, it's because the vendor might be positioning for a certain solution to win in the market.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So I think there, you know, there are very strong technical arguments for why it makes a lot of sense for VC API and all that kind of stuff. I just think we should clearly be aware that there are some vendors out there that view VC API as a threat to their, you know, business models, or at least their technological solutions they're proposing to their customers. But all that said, we're probably overthinking this. Let's just, you know, unless there are any objections, you know, let's just take it to the VC working group and have the debate there and see, you know, if they're legitimate, you know, concerns, technical concerns, and then go from there. I do think those of you that are in that working group need to help us to make sure that we keep the group focused on legitimate technical concerns and not like FUD and political arguments and things of that nature. Cause that has kind of, we've seen a little bit of an uptick in those sorts of arguments in the working group. So would appreciate everyone's help to try and focus the concerns on technical concerns and things of that nature. Anything else, with respect to, relevant community updates or anything else we should talk about in that area? Okay. We can cover pull requests really quickly, but the short of it is that I haven't had a chance to process a number of these pull requests. Apologies for that. The feature freeze in the verifiable credentials working group is taking priority. Here's the link, and here are the pull requests. Oh, there is a new one, which is Marcus has basically said that, as a number of you know, Marcus, you know, was one of the initial authors of the VC API, and he hasn't had enough spare cycles in the last few months to participate. But he, Danube Tech, will continue to implement VC API in their products. So there's support here, but he's just like, I really should take my name off of the, off of the spec, because I'm not able to participate. He's also in Europe. This is a late call for him. So that's the only new pull request. We'll process that after this heads up to everyone else. All the other PRs are just kind of waiting for people to fix them so that we can merge that's it for PRs. Any questions, concerns about PRs before we move on? Okay. Let's see. Next topic is presentation of VC API to OWF. John, do you want to take us through this one?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Manu. Well, maybe to start, I can do a brief intro of myself, a reintro. I'm a software engineer at EnergyWeb. We are an organization, a nonprofit. I am using decentralized technology for the energy industry. And we have a VC API implementation. So what I'd like to introduce here is how VC API and the Open Wallet Foundation could collaborate, or what the link is there. So I'm not really associated with the Open Wallet Foundation directly, but I've been following them moderately closely for the past few months. Maybe I can start with a 30-second background on the Open Wallet Foundation. Yeah, thanks for pointing it out, Manu, for folks who aren't familiar with it. So they have recently formally launched within the past week or so. Actually, here I have the link to their launch presentation handy. And their focus areas are not governance, not trust frameworks, not standards, but writing code. So what they want to do, as I understand, is have a set of open source software components that implement some standards, and they're not looking to develop those standards, nor are they looking to put out wallets to end users, but rather just have the components. So there's this Open Wallet Foundation Architecture Task Force, which meets every Monday, and they've had some presentations over the past few months, I'd say. And recently they had, for example, a presentation from the DIDCOM community, and I think, what was it, last 2 weeks ago, maybe? There was one on the Aries community, or the Aries code base. And so I thought that maybe this would be a good time to reach out to the Open Wallet Foundation Architecture Task Force and potentially present VC API to them, or introduce VC API or mention VC API in some way. And I think it's important because, like Manu mentioned, it's important to have implementations of VC API. And I think the Open Wallet Foundation could be a notable implementation of VC API. And I didn't feel comfortable going to the Open Wallet Foundation as kind of a representative, or really even saying too much about VC API, because I don't feel as though I'm the most knowledgeable about VC API, and I want to do VC API justice, and I think we can do better if I get support from the community. Yeah, maybe I can leave it there. My objective is to discuss this and ideally come up with the next steps for how we can proceed. Get any thoughts?
Excellent. Thank you, John. Patrick, you're up.
Yeah, so just a few things. So when I said, I work, sorry, for just say who I am. So I work in Canada. I work for the Digital Identity Laboratory of Canada. So we help to break adoption barriers to digital identity. So it's a very broad scope. We are involved with provinces here implementing the Pan-Canadian Trust Registry, which is based on Hyperledger, Indy, and Aries. So we are quite aware of the Open Wallet Foundation. One question that was asked when I shared that the VC API was to be presented to the Open Wallet Foundation was why? What's the purpose? What's the goal of presenting this? So I think that's probably one thing that should be kept in mind when presenting, is why are you presenting this to the Open Wallet Foundation? My second point is, most probably the focus should be made on exchange and how does the VC API would interface with a wallet. or a holder component. And yeah, that's, I think that's pretty much my comments I had.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. Totally agree with that. I think, that's exactly, where we should potentially, start out. I mean, one of the things, hopefully everyone can see this, the meetings that they've had so far have been fairly varied and wide in the types of things that they're, you know, talking about. But I totally agree with, you know, Patrick, we should probably focus on like what parts of the VC API could be used in digital wallets or are being used in digital wallets today, like the exchanges stuff.
Yeah. Or like how could the VC API enable the DITCOM exchange of a credential, for example, mm-hmm. or open OIDC for VC exchange of credential. I think these would be interesting point because the verifiable credential issuance, like it's important, but I think they are more going to be focused on how could a wallet receive that credential, store mm-hmm. it and present it.
Yeah.
And this is done mostly by the holder side of thing or the exchange from what I understand on the VC API so far.
Yep. Plus one to that. The other important thing in there is that, we have that interact mechanism in it's really in the verifiable presentation, you know, request response spec, but there's a section in there called interact which allows you to bootstrap into other protocols. So, you know, you get a request across, but in the interact field, you can have like a DIDCOM initiation message, an OID for initiation message or a, you know, verifiable presentation, you know, follow on there. So there are other, you know, there are ways to kind of bootstrap into other protocols that we've got, that we're working on here. Patrick, you're up.
And just another idea I had based on what we were saying earlier about the test suite, maybe present how the VC API could also be used as a way to test wallets with some test suites. Not sure if that would be a bit too early to tackle as a front, but, you know, could be interesting.
Yeah, plus one to that. So John, I mean, you know, first of all, thank you for bringing this up. And I think you're right. We want to tackle this as a community, which means that we'd need, you know, a volunteer to put together a slide deck. And so that, you know, the rest of us can kind of review it and make sure it's communicating the thing that we think would be good. And then of course we would probably want to show up to that call as a community. To provide the support to whoever's presenting. So I think where we are right now is, you know, we'd need those volunteers to work on the slide deck, put that together and do the presentation. I'm hesitating. I'm not going to be able to do it because of where we are right now in the feature freeze, you know, candidate rec phase for the verifiable credential working group. Lots of work happening there. So Patrick, you're up. You're on the queue next. And then John, go ahead, Patrick.
Just curious. I know a few while ago, like there was a presentation of this VC API to the VC working group. Maybe can have a look at how that was received, what was done as a presentation and maybe use that to, you know, avoid maybe some mistakes that have been made. Cause from what I understood, it wasn't received so well. That could be for a bunch of reasons, but maybe that could be also used as a reference to how to present the VC API.
Thanks, Patrick. Go ahead, John.
Sure. Yeah. I'm glad to volunteer and help put together this slide deck or at least coordinate some of the efforts there. I did want to ask Patrick, so were you mentioning that you had brought up VC API to the Open Wallet Foundation
no.
coordinators? Oh, you haven't.
No.
All right. Great. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to take this on. Maybe I will mention to the Open Wallet Foundation folks that were interested and, just to get it on their radar and perhaps I can, at an upcoming VC API meeting, present a draft or we can coordinate via the mailing list as well.
Yep, that sounds good. That sounds like a good next step. And then, of course, you know, we can't move forward without that volunteer to put together the slide deck and do the presentation, all that kind of stuff. So, Dimitri, I don't want to put you on the spot. I remember you semi-volunteering for that, but I don't know how much spare cycles you'd have. Or I might right. be misremembering, so please tell me if I'm like, no, I did not.
No, I did offer to help. I probably don't want to be the primary point of contact with OWF, but if somebody like emails Tracy and so we get the go ahead, I'm happy to either, I attend those calls anyways, I'm happy to either help answer questions on there or even present.
Okay, so, great.
Yeah, I'm available to support and present, shouldn't be relied upon to lead or create the slides.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Dimitri. And thanks for, you know, being able to be there in a supporting capacity. John, I'll keep asking for a volunteer to take lead, through the next couple of weeks. And then once we get that, we'll go from there. Does that sound like a good next step to you?
Sure. Yeah. Or I'm happy to start, taking the lead on this, starting to put together a presentation outline and maybe even some slides.
Yeah. That'd be great. If you're willing to do that,
yeah.
Do the work there, that'd be fantastic. And then we can provide some feedback and maybe if it's in a shared form, we can, you know, all contribute a slide or two. Okay. I think that's a good next step. Thanks again, John, for bringing that up. And we'll ask again next week and see how things are going. Okay. That's that item. The next item up, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, is a discussion around exchanges. So deep dive on VC exchanges, VC API exchanges. Did we have another topic that folks needed to cover today, or is this the one? Is this the next one? Okay, I'm taking silence to be, yes, let's talk about API exchanges. All right. We, over the past several weeks, have been trying to figure out what endpoints belong where for the Verifiable Credentials API, and we've gotten through a good first pass of that, right? So that needs to be turned into a pull request. But during all of our discussions around what, you know, bits of API belong on what services or on what components, let me bring up this diagram here. You know, we were talking about which one of these components had which APIs on it. Some things would go on a, you know, issuer coordinator, other things would go on an issuer service. We had those discussions. Questions came up about these two arrows here, basically. This present verifiable credentials and receive verifiable credentials. Basically the exchanges aspect of what happens in the VC API. So in the section on presenting, in the spec today, we have three API endpoints. I'm going to do a little bit of a vague hand wave over that. You know, you can classify these in different ways, but we've got like some endpoints that we talk about, with respect to exchanges. And we have, this concept of initiating an exchange, and continuing an exchange. So initiating an exchange can be viewed as, and again, I'm trying not to be too precise with my language. Initiating an exchange is like, me going, hey, I'd like to see this type of verifiable credential from you, or hey, I'd like you to do a DID authentication. And then continuing an exchange is a, hey, I'd like to see, you know, let's say you're at a car rental agency. Hey, I'd like to see your driver's license to make sure you can drive. And then, continuing the exchange would be, okay, now that I have your driver's license, I would like this other credential from you so you could complete the car rental. And I see people have already raising their hands, which means I probably got some aspect of this wrong. Let's go to the queue. Patrick, you're up, then Dave, then Joe. Go ahead, Patrick.
So regarding initiate exchange, is an exchange scoped to the interaction, or could I initiate an exchange and then continue that exchange over the span of a month, a year, or so on? Like, let's say if I connect with this car dealership, maybe a car dealership is a bad example because you're not going to go back to the car dealership over time, but maybe you could. Like, I connect with some kind of service, and then I expect to have repeat operation with that service. Would I need to redo or initiate exchange every time, or how would that work?
That's a great question. Dave, you're up next.
Sure. Was someone else on the queue? Because I think what I can do is talk about how we're using, how our company's using exchanges today, and kind of give an overview of that, and that might help.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'll put you behind Joe. Does that work?
Yeah, that's fine.
Joe, you're up.
Yeah, my question might make more sense after Dave gives a walkthrough. The main thing that's confusing to me is we seem to be using exchanges in at least three different ways. And one of the ways I understood, but the way this talks about it, and you just now talked about it, Manu, I did not who I and we were in these exchanges. Like, who creates an exchange, who executes an exchange. And in particular, it seemed to me on a previous call, I thought I had an aha that I believe Dave and Dimitri were both like, yeah, well, I'm glad you finally got that because that's the whole point. And that seemed to be about bundling a bunch of parameters and turn it into a short URL or a URL that's the exchange endpoint so that someone can just click on a link and all the information is there that might be needed to satisfy that exchange. So that made a lot of sense to me because it streamlined some processes. And I understood in that model, you would create exchanges. And again, the U is, you know, part of the ambiguity here, but someone who has the authority to would create an exchange and then give the URL for that exchange to someone to go execute that exchange. That made sense to me. But it seems to me if that's the pattern, then the exchanges should just be a shortcut to an existing semantic. And that's one of the places where I get confused because I hear, oh, you would just use an exchange for that as if we don't need a semantic endpoint because the exchange does the semantics. And that's where I get confused.
Got it. Thank you for that explanation, Joe. I think we're much closer to understanding than I think there are a couple of tweaks on what you said and we can get to full understanding. But, Dimitri is on the queue and then Dave Longley to explain. So Dimitri, go ahead.
Oh, I think I'm on, after Dave. I was just going to mention how we use exchanges at DCC.
Okay. Dave, go ahead. Then Dimitri.
Okay. Sure. So, and hopefully this will touch on some of Joe's concerns and we'll see. So the main thing that we use exchanges for today is to facilitate a protocol between a user's client, usually a wallet, to distinguish it just from like a user agent. So it's to facilitate a protocol between the user's wallet and the issuer. So the protocol involves the wallet providing information in an exchange for issued verifiable credentials. So the exchange process might require one or more request responses between the parties. And another useful way of thinking of exchanges, I think, is as a way to get a user that starts on a website, like on an issuer coordinator website, into a flow between their digital wallet and the issuer coordinator through sort of backend services. So our implementation in particular is such that an exchanger service, there's an exchanger service that an issuer coordinator can use. So ahead of any interactions with any users, some administrator for the issuer comes in and creates exchanger instances on this service. And an exchanger is based on a configuration that includes access tokens to use an issuer service and a verifier service, a set of steps to define any exchange that's based on that exchanger, and a set of templates to be populated with data that's received in those steps and when an exchange is first created.
Could we point out in this diagram what things are involved in what you're...
So the things that exist today in the diagram that are involved would be the issuer coordinator. What we don't have on here is an exchanger service. Either the exchanger service could be integrated with the issuer coordinator, so maybe just all fits in there. Our particular implementation has a way to abstract that out into its own service. That service or the issuer coordinator communicate with an issuer service and a verifier service. And those are also on those diagrams. So the exchanger service needs the ability to be able to verify things and to issue things. And it does that by accessing a verifier service and an issuer service. So, once any one of these exchangers is created, the issuer coordinator is given access to use it to create specific exchanges based on it. So when do you create an exchange and who's you? Use the issuer coordinator. So when does an issuer coordinator create an exchange? Whenever a user comes and visits the issuer coordinator website, that website's backend, the issuer coordinator creates an exchange based on one of these configured exchangers I just mentioned. The creation of that exchange includes any initial information that might be obtained from the user. This might be data that's going to go into a VCs, for example, or maybe something else. And when that exchange gets created, it gets its own capability URL that is to be shared with the user. The exchange in our implementation can be created. It can be set up to allow the user's client to either use the VC API to complete the exchange or OID for VC. And obviously other protocols could also be added into this. The capability URL can either be shared on its own with the user's client, if the user's client knows it's a VC API, or it could be shared via a VPR using the interact field. It could also be represented as an OpenID initiate issuance URL for OID for VC. And that URL could be given directly, it could be given via QR code, or it could go in the VPR again through an interact field. All of those things are possibilities to communicate this capability URL over to the client so it can start doing this delivery of this exchange and delivery of VCs. So after the user's client has this exchange URL, it either posts an empty body to the URL to get the VPR, or if it already had the VPR, they post their VPR response to the URL. The exchange URL then either responds back with another VPR if more information is needed, or with a VP that includes the issued credentials. And that's a rundown of how our implementation works and how these pieces are abstracted apart.
All right. Thanks, Dave. I think it might help if we used a concrete use case to walk through all of that. Because, if folks aren't familiar with all those pieces, I think it may be difficult for them to follow that. Dimitri, you're up next.
I agree with your comment, Dave. I think a concrete use case, such as using the exchanges for refresh, would work. But so, before I get into how easy,
Dimitri, can you talk a little bit louder?
Hold on. Let me switch to different headset. 1 second.
Okay, that might help. Thanks.
Is this better?
How is this? Is this better?
Yes.
Is very good.
Okay. So before I get into how we use it at DCC, I want to say a couple of high-level words. So the main use case that the Exchange APIs serve that had at the time differentiated VC API from the other two protocols, DIDCOM and OpenID Connect, but since the appearing of the Exchange API protocol, OpenID for verifiable presentations and OID for issuance, and DIDCOM adopted this same mechanism informed by what we did here at VC API endpoint. So all three communities saw the the need for this primitive, and adopted it once they saw, that we did it here. And I believe that's, it's an important data point because it shows that it's a, just shows the demand for it. So specifically the need for multi-step interactive issuing. So not just, because at the moment VC API defines a very low level backend service issue, which should really be termed sign something rather than issue. Whereas what Exchange tends to be used for is actually issuing credentials in an interactive way where it's the wallet talks to the issuer, to the issuer coordinator, and through that gets a credential. So specifically, what we're using at DCC for is, hey, university, could I have my diploma or can I have my course completion credential? No, you cannot. In order to do that, I would like the following list of prerequisites. Send me this and this and this information before I can hand you, before I can issue this credential. Then the wallet, looks in its storage, hands over the credentials with the user's, consent, and then receives the credential. So that's our use case specifically, but that pattern, the, the interact service in the response from the VC API is a crucial one, I think. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Dimitri. John, you're on the queue next.
Thanks. It's just a quick question for Dave. When you said you create the exchange, or the, I think it was the coordinator creates the issuer coordinator creates the exchange in your example, is that done via the initiate exchange endpoint in your implementation, or is it, when you say create exchange, you mean it's done prior to initiate exchange?
Joe, you're on the queue next, then Dave.
I can come back if Dave has a quick answer to that question.
Dave?
Yeah, sure. The quick answer is the exchange is created before the OpenID, if you're referring to OpenID initiate issuance, is done. So you create the exchange, storing any information about the user that you might have gotten in their interaction with the website. That creates a URL and all of the OpenID for VC stuff that you need to be able to run that protocol. And that creates a URL that is fed into, or it creates the parameters and things that you need to build the OpenID issue, initiate issuance URL. And then you pass that URL to a wallet. So it sets up all of the state and everything that the wallet's going to need to be able to interact with. And it gives it an address at this URL that you then pass to the wallet.
John, did that answer your question?
No, I don't think so, but that's all right. No worries.
Okay. Joe, you're up next.
Okay. I'm still struggling. It feels like a pretty huge feature creep, especially with the detail that this can be a front end to OpenID for VC, and any other protocol that we might want to put in here. It seems to me that the fundamental use case of, hey, we have a complicated set of interactions where we may need to go get multiple different things. There may be multiple VPRs. It feels like we have a mechanism to do that with the interact response. And so any request into the system can process the interact and go to the next step in the process. And I can appreciate that there are exchanges that or that there is a value in an exchange of setting up that capability URL so that you can trigger a fairly complicated data operation with just a URL. My question that I have around that is, and it was sort of answered with OpenID, but that's why I feel it's feature creep. are there semantics with regard to VC exchange? And I mean that more broadly, not the exchange's mechanism, but the, you know, sending VCs back and forth that, do the exchanges point to anything that is not one of our endpoints? I guess that's a way to put the question. In other words, is this capability URL designed to simplify accessing other endpoints defined in the VC API? Or are there new semantics that you can only do with an exchange with the exception of setting up the capability endpoint? Like, I think I get that. A capability URL.
Okay, thanks, Joe. I think the answer is the latter, Joe, that there are new semantics that where you can't just point to existing APIs like the issue credential or presentation prove or things like that. That might be an important distinction.
Yeah, and what would those be then? Because that's what I'm not understanding.
Got it. Okay, so we should dig into that. Patrick, you're up next on the queue.
So regarding what Dimitri explained, I found that very interesting tidbit of information, especially the parallel to DIDCOM and OIDC for VC. I'm more familiar with DIDCOM, and it's interesting because reading through whether it's ACAPI or different doc, there's, you know, here and there some mention of the VC API sprinkled from some time and place someone implemented something regarding the state of the VC API. Now, regarding Exchange and DIDCOM and OIDC, and I might gear that question towards you, Dimitri, could we say that DIDCOM is a type of exchange, or is an exchange really its own thing? Like, how would that translate to other things? Like, if I want to have a VC API that has a certain exchange that is basically a DIDCOM issue credential V2, could I enable that flow through exchanges, or are they separate things? Or
great question. Let's see. Can I get on the queue?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you're next.
Are we skipping Joe though?
Was that a previous queue? Okay.
Great question. So let's take that in the reverse order. Can one switch over to DIDCOM using the exchange endpoint? Yes, I think so. As Dave mentioned, they're doing switching over to the OpenID Connect protocol using the exchange endpoint. I can imagine a similar thing could be done with a DIDCOM. Do I think that DIDCOM is what do I think how it compares or what the relationship is to the exchange? I think the DIDCOM protocol is fundamentally exchange based. It specifically, the design decision that was present was for each call and reply, for each endpoint, we're gonna allow the responses to be asynchronous. So basically, it's not that I think DIDCOM is a subset of the exchange endpoint. It is a superset. It does more stuff than the exchange endpoint, but you could say that the exchange endpoint in VC API takes the DIDCOM asynchronous interact approach and applies it to the rest of the rest of the VC API endpoints. And just to correct what I said, it's not that DIDCOM added the interact mechanism after VC API. It's specifically the presentation exchange specification, which DIDCOM uses, that added the interact. Okay, that's it for me.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, one of the quick points I wanted to make is that I think one of the key features that exchanges provides is it enables the use of protocols that cross trust boundaries. So it's interactions between the, you know, the holder, the user, and the client, interactions between, you know, the, I guess I'll just say the wallet and these other services. And I think that's an important part of the exchange process.
Yep, plus one to that. I'm on the queue to end the call. This has been a good discussion, but clearly it is not over. We definitely need to spend more time on this, so we will schedule more time to talk about exchanges on next week's call. With that, thank you everyone for the lively discussion today and each of your attention. Really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week, and we will chat again next week. Take care. Bye.